Hello, everyone. This is Peter Granich. As always, you should not consider this as investment advice. You should always speak to a licensed financial advisor before making any investment decision and to read all my disclosures. If you ever played casino craps, you may have witnessed a rare stretch when a shooter keeps the dice unusually long and makes the point repeatedly. During a roll like that, several things tend to happen. Players place many additional bets beyond the basic pass line. Because most people are betting on the shooter, not against them at all times, the table really starts to build gains. The longer the roll continues, the easier it is to feel as if there's no sevens left in the dice. For anyone unfamiliar with the game, that long streak ends, as all do, the moment a seven is rolled after a point has been established. On these rare rolls, players often raise their bets and take on more risk than usual. In my humble opinion, that's where the U.S. stock market is now, aided in part by a professional advisor community that was either not born or in diapers when I first entered the business and have experienced one or no bear markets, and certainly not any that last any length of time to where people actually lessen or stop buying stocks in general. That seems impossible to both them and their clientele these days. But back in the dinosaur days of the late 70s and early 80s, the Dow Jones Industrial Average had traded just between 700 and 1,000 for 13 years. The bearishness on Wall Street was so thick, not only could you cut it with a knife, but the thought of a large-scale ownership of equities was such a poor thought that Business Week magazine ran a famous front-page story entitled The Death of Equities. Then a young man named Robert Prechter Jr. came out with something almost no one at the time knew about, called the Elliott Wave Theory, and began forecasting a massive long-term bull market, with $3,600 as his first major target price. The masses on Wall Street and the financial media tied to their hips back then like they are now scoffed at such a thought. Many said, how can we go to 3,600 when the Dow was stuck for years between 700 and 1,000? I think sentiment has flipped 180 since then. Almost no one today doubts that stocks will keep rising over time, even after periodic sell-offs, or that long-term losses are unlikely. You could appreciate this, since for a few decades that's been the case, only now much of what's allowed that has turned from good to bad fundamentally. In fact, if not for this and the never stays down belief and something really critical to keeping the market up, passive investing, which to me is a quasi-like Ponzi scheme that has been the single biggest bullish factor and literally has fed on itself up until now, the overall stock market bubble would have popped by now if not for this. But like all bubbles, they eventually pop, even though, in the moment, people insist this time it's different. It never is. And while this bubble could still rise higher and longer than any of us expect right now, it will end badly, hurting many who believed in it now far more than those who'll be able to get out before it bursts. I have said that the winners from here will be those who avoid big losses. Rather than betting against this bubble, I am focusing on metals and mining, a market whose bull run is only now entering its second leg, and the gains there so far have more than offset not staying long the bubble. I will spend most of my time discussing this via my X page, but I like to again suggest being aware of my 10 bearish factors that you can read below in the link. I also want to make a few other key factors that you need to take into consideration right now. I have written about the K economy and the great wealth and quality. There's a link to it down as well below. Please understand that the big players on Wall Street basically cater to the small, extremely wealthy at the top of the pyramid and either have no real experience and or don't care how the masses are not flourishing like they are and their clientele are. This may feel like let the masses eat cake to them, but they are heading to be a 21st century version of King Louis and Marie Antoinette. I have spoken about the expectation that Trump's replacement at the Bureau of Labor Statistics would be more magical than even David Copperfield. And sure enough, last Friday's employment report was yet another smoke and mirrors job. Here's why. First, while the establishment survey showed an impressive 115,000 jump in jobs, when virtually everyone is expecting a big drop, looking at the composite reveals two things. The biggest contributor was semi-government jobs from the education and health service category, which added 46,000, and has been the biggest and only consistent source of jobs growth this decade. Healthcare and social assistance has created nearly 1.8 million private sector jobs since the end of 2023, while all other industries combined during that time lost 127,800 jobs. But even more remarkable was the surge in carrier and messenger jobs, which soared by 38,000 in April, reversing a 52,000 drop before the month before. Did DoorDash and Uber have some sort of hiring binge, even though the thought was they were mostly laying off their thousands of illegal workers? In other words, just two job categories accounted for almost all the job gains in April. As for the beating heart of the U.S. economy, manufacturing jobs, they tumbled to 2,000 after surging 15,000 in March, and that was the first negative print of 2026. Manufacturing jobs are now down 73,000 over the past year, even though Trump was bringing it back, remember, a year ago? But what's even more concerning is that the entire base of the monthly print was put in doubt after the BLS, which really should just drop the L and be called BS, reported that in April that their famous birth-death adjustment model added 391,000 jobs, which, by the way, are not actual jobs, but a baseline for model assumptions on what the numbers in any given month should be. One would think after all the huge negative revisions to jobs under Biden, as a result of this very flawed birth-death assumption, the BLS would have learned its lesson. Oh, it learned its lesson, all right. Trump clearly hired a first-rate magician. But stepping away from the establishment survey, things are even uglier in the much more accurate household survey. It is here that we find the contrary to the above-mentioned payroll increase. The number of employee workers actually declined by 226,000 in April. Worse, this wasn't a one-off, as shown below. The numbers of employed workers has been declining every month this year and is now down an average 343,000 jobs every month of 2026. And this is after hitting a record high in December 2025. Unfortunately, this means that we're once again witnessing the infamous divergence between the household and establishment surveys, as the number of employed workers has been declining and is now at the lowest since December 2024. The number of payrolls tracked by the establishment survey is now at an all-time high, a number which is clearly not supported by the data. This divergence is also why the unemployment remained at 4.3%, even though employment shrank by 226,000. The employment rate did not rise because people left the labor force. There was more rot under the surface as the number of full-time jobs in April plunged by 424,000, while part-time jobs surged by 123,000. Now, if the employment scam, and I really believe it is a scam, wasn't enough, there are numerous other bubble-busting factors at now, but let me close with just two of them, one more immediate than the other. Trump's interpretation of how the war with Iran is going makes me feel like I'm watching the WWE. If this is winning, I hope we're never losing. And two, I doubt I'm alone in someone who voted for Trump all three times, but feels now he's truly dropped the ball big time this term. I think this belief will play a huge role in the November election. And if you think it was ugly before, Not even the WWE creators can come up with what's surely to take place if the Democrats get back the House, or worse, the Senate too. So sit back, grab some popcorn, but strongly consider the foundation I believe the best is to be built on. First, we must live within our means, if not below them now. The cost of living is out of control and going to get worse, not better. On top of that, governments at all levels are going to seek higher taxes and increased revenue schemes, including things like mandatory public belief programs, or what I call 21st century Robin Hood actions. Capital preservation versus capital appreciation must be our main goal. It's not how much one makes but doesn't lose what's going to separate the winners from the losers. Being a live chicken versus a dead duck is nothing to be ashamed of. Peace be with you.